This is Sublime Every Time, Jack Morris. Noah, pro wrestler and part of the Good Looking Guys. And you are listening to the amazing, the fantastic, the Sublime Wrestling.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to On the Indies. My name is Adam Ryan, and joining me today on the show is someone who's one of the forefathers of internet wrestling criticism, and someone whose work I've personally been a fan of for a really long time, dating back to the original Death Valley Driver video reviews. He's written for The Ringer, GQ, and even has a book out called Way of the Blade, 100 of the Greatest Bloody Matches in Wrestling History. He's one of the original DVDVR players, a founding member of the world-famous DVDVR message board, and a founding member of the Segunda Caída blog, your good friend and mine, the one and only Phil Schneider. Phil, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Adam. Thanks for having me on.
So the main reason I wanted to have you on the show today is to talk about this event coming up over WrestleMania weekend called Dean, which is essentially a tribute show to a man you were friends with, Dean Rasmussen, the man who started DVDVR and a pioneer in the wrestling and writing and criticism space, who we all sadly lost last spring. And with this event being kind of a DVDVR and Segunda Caída combined with action wrestling, we'll talk some about that too. So before we talk about the show itself, let's get some background on Dean, the DVDVRs, and Segunda Caída. So when did you first encounter Dean?
God, I'm trying to think back. And I'm an old person who's not great with dates. So this is going to be, but I think it was around 1996. Around 96, okay. 95, 96. I discovered a video store in Hayward, California. I'm originally from Oakland and Berkeley. And when I went home from college, I discovered this Japanese video store that had Japanese television videotapes of New Japan and All Japan. So this would have been like right in the height of, this would be like 95, 96, right? So the height of this, right? Like, yeah. Kobashi, Misawa, Kawada.
The Four Pillars.
And so I, right. And you know, in New Japan too, right? Hashimoto, all the junior stuff. So I started... I got two VCR hookup at my parents' house. When I would go home for college for, you know, this, you know, the breaks, I would make tapes of all of these. I would rent and then copy these Japanese videotapes. And I started, this was right when I started getting into, you know, the internet wrestling world, and people would have tapes and things like that they would trade and sell. So I had this like stash that I could use as like a, okay, I've got this Japanese TV. So I would send that to people. I made like a comp of it on Rec Sports Pro Wrestling, which is a Usenet group. Started sending that out to people. Started getting stuff back, Lucha, ECW, territory stuff. And I made my first Schneider comp, which were these mixtapes that I would make of wrestling, 8-hour mixtapes. I would sell for $20. It would help me pay like, you know, I did it for probably 5 or 6 years, maybe a little even longer than that. But so I started doing that, and then I started, like, you know, as part of getting involved with like the crew on Rec Sports Pro Wrestling, and Dean was the guy who would write on there, and started doing this Death Valley Driver video review, the initial ones, like 1, 2, 3, where just like Dean would watch some stuff on a tape and write about it, right? And so I started trading with him and chatting with him. And, you know, he said, well, you should come write some stuff. I was writing for my school newspaper at that point in college. So you should write some stuff for this next one. I came on at like 5 or something, like that, 4 or 5. And then it became more of like a thing that came out a little more. And Phil Ripa, who was another one of the big Death Valley, he was a guy that I worked with on the school newspaper at American University, and was like the other guy that I knew at college who was like a wrestling guy. So I started like looped him in, and we started looping other people in, and it became like a bigger thing. And then eventually I figured out how to make a message board, like a temp job I had right out of college. I was temping for the brain injury. I remember this very, very specifically. I was temping for the Brain Injury Association while also fighting Golden Gloves. So I would come in sometimes to Brain Injury Association with like a black eye or a big bruise on my face. And all these nice older ladies at the Brain Injury Association would be sending me pamphlets about the damn it. You're such a bright young boy. You shouldn't be getting hit in the head like this. So I was working at the Brain Injury Association. And then like you know, with like one of these temp jobs, you know, where you'd have like maybe an hour, if that, worth of work over the 8-hour days, right? Like, because, you know, if you're temping, like, they don't want to give you too much because they worry you might fuck it up. And you also, like, almost have this pact, especially if you're filling in for somebody. Like, yeah. You never want to, it's like immoral if you're a temp to ask for work, right? Because yeah, then you're basically telling the people that who are, you know, employ the person you're replacing, that the person you're replacing doesn't do very much, right? So it's like, really, it's like morally wrong to say, like, hey, look, I did the 45 minutes of work you gave me for today. Could you have more work? So you just don't do it. So you just get on the internet. I got on LimeWire and Napster and downloaded a lot of music. And then I figured out how to create a message board. And that was the first Death Valley Driver message board, and sort of, you know, figured that out at a Brain Injury Association temp day one day. And that became a bigger thing, and more people started to come on that. And the Death Valley Driver became a bigger thing. And that's sort of how it started. And, you know, we did that for a bunch of years. And eventually that part of that writing kind of slowed down. People started to get a little less interested in it. I was still interested in doing writing more regularly. And then me and my buddy, Tom Carroll Gassner, started Segunda Caída, which was a more regular thing than the Death Valley Drivers at that point.
Yeah, Segunda Caída is actually one of my questions on here. So, you know, how that got started and everything.
So, it was just kind of like, you know, people were, you know, the Death Valley Drivers were coming out a lot less frequently, and people were just sort of moving on to other stuff. And as far as their writing goes, Dean was starting to have lots of kids and less time for this. And I had yet to get to that point in my life, and I had some time to do it and kind of wanted to do, you know, write some stuff with Tom, and we started doing that. Mm-hmm. He was my buddy Tom, who was a Death Valley Driver guy and then also a Segunda Caída guy. He was in DC at that point with me, and we would be hanging out, like, okay, watching wrestling. I lived in Adams Morgan, which was one of the big bar neighborhoods in DC at that point. And sometimes Tom would just show up at my apartment at like 2 a.m., kind of shit faced after drinking all night, and saying, hey, do you want to watch some wrestling? And I'd be like, yeah, okay, I don't do anything. I'm 26. What am I doing today? Sure, let's watch some wrestling. And then we'd write about it. And eventually brought in Eric. I don't remember exactly how I decided to bring in Eric, but Tom kind of faded away a little bit on the writing he does, although we're still buddies and working on a book project that may come out at some point, maybe never. So then me and Eric started doing it more regularly, and that's how kind of that started. We eventually brought in Matt. And now mostly just Matt and Eric, right? Especially when I started writing more for the Ringer, I kind of put a lot of my energy into that when I sort of was writing more regularly for them. So that's kind of the general, you know, short biography. Like, you know, if you're doing the 5-minute video montage of how we got to this point, that's what that would be.
So was Dean ever a writer in Segunda Caída?
No, he was. It was kind of a separate thing from what he was doing. He'd still write for the thought. He'd write a lot on the board, but that was kind of the idea. Second fall, it was kind of my own. It was sort of my idea of sort of breaking out a little bit out of and trying to sort of set my own place in it, right? As opposed to being, mm-hmm, you know, Dean's Robin. So like, let me see if I can try to be Batman. Unclear, but that was kind of the idea. but we're still friends up until, you know, obviously one point I would talk to Dean like every week, and it became less as we got older and other things happening in our lives. But I would, you know, back in like when I was in my 20s, he was like kind of like, he's a little older than me, so he's like almost like a big brother. When I was like 22, I'd be asking for advice on music and girls, and you know, he had already kind of advanced a little past that point I was in my life. It's obviously very sad when he passed away. And we had the show was something that I had been talking with Eric and Matt about doing a show for a while. Mm-hmm. It's always been kind of one of my bucket list things to do in the wrestling space. I've been able to check a lot of things off that list, but that was a big one, was I wanted to do my own kind of show. And so I've been talking to Matt and Eric about it. And then when we kind of, you know, after Dean passed, we had the idea of, well, let's make this a tribute show to him, because he met so much to so many people, you know, personally, and also just as a guy who was sort of, you know, a trailblazer in trying to appreciate lots of different things, lots of different types of wrestling, and introducing people to a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't interact with Dean a lot. I mean, I was kind of here and there on the DVD VR board, and I'm still kind of hanging around the DVD VR board currently. But I you know, I read the old DVD VR issues, and I really, really enjoyed them. I was like, what are these? Where did these come from? It's like, these are the greatest things ever. So, I mean, they really helped kind of influence me in a way of like watching wrestling and kind of what I kind of latched onto here and there. So, just for those
I think interestingly, a lot of people wrote about what he kind of meant to them after that. I think the person who actually summarized Dean the best was actually Samoa Joe. I don't know if you saw this. What he wrote about Dean was he was a wrestling fan who helped other wrestling fans discover and learn to love wrestling from all over the world, from all time periods. You have to be like anyone in your own fandom, be like Dean. And that was what he was. He was mostly a positive person. He wasn't somebody who would get into like big, you know, back and forth flame wars. He almost sent us to do that in a way. Like we were the shock troops of the kind of thing. Me and Tom would wade into that shit. And he kind of always stayed above it and was more just like about, hey, you know what is really awesome? This Arcion match, or, you know, it was really incredible. Yeah. This El Dandy ECMLL match, or I mean, he was the guy who appreciated almost everything. A much more he had much wider, broader tastes in some ways than I do. My stuff's my views have calcified a little bit, and kind of his never did. Mm-hmm. He would always be like he, some of the times he would, even recently, he would like really talk about something. I was like, man, that sucked, dude. But okay, I appreciate that you're trying, that you're being like Catholic about it in the sense that, like, right, you know. I'm gonna love all of this stuff.
Right. It's like, hey, here, watch this War Six Man, you know.
Right, but that stuff's great. But sometimes it'd be like, you know, it was really awesome, this New Japan Okada match. I'm like, that pass. But okay.
So, you know, Action Wrestling is a promotion behind the show. Why don't you tell everyone kind of about Action Wrestling?
So they're a promotion that runs mainly out of Georgia, and I think they've been around like 4 or 5 years. They're run by Matt Griffin, who is a guy who wrestled for a while as JC North and like Wild Side and that kind of Southern Virginia, Georgia indie scene, right? Like he was a guy who would probably had some matches against AJ Styles, had some matches against Ron Killens, good wrestler, and decided to start promoting this thing. And he was a guy who was always kind of in the DVD-VR orbit. He'd post on the boards, and I never had any direct interaction with him back then, but like once, you know, Action started putting stuff on, was a product I really enjoyed. They had sort of a crew of wrestlers that they use, and they bring in sort of interesting guys. Early on, they would bring in guys like Slim J or Fred Yehi, and who were like these wrestlers who didn't really get as much of a shine despite being really great around that period. And they kind of developed their own crew of guys who turned really good, like Adam Priest, who's kind of like a Action guy more than anything else. So they do a lot of really cool stuff in Georgia. He was just like a guy I know. Well, there's like, when I was trying to think about doing this idea, it's like, what's the guy I know who knows how to promote wrestling? And knows, like, because that's the thing about always the hang up of trying to put on a show is like, man, I don't know where to get a ring or like a sound system or how to set up a thing to buy tickets. Like the logistics were always very daunting, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I got to figure out all the logistics. I got to figure out the 17 things that I don't know. I think a lot of people who put on wrestling shows lose a ton of money. Part of the reason is they just don't know that kind of stuff, right? The nuts and bolts of actually putting something like on. There's like a Matt's guy who's successful. Not, you know, he's not becoming a millionaire for this, but he's profitable doing these shows, right? He doesn't lose money really on shows hardly ever. I think he said he was talking about this. He's only ever lost money on like one show ever.
Oh, wow. Otherwise,
makes money back, makes a little bit of a profit. I don't know. We're being pretty optimistic about Dean as far as the people were flying in. We're probably gonna lose some money, but whatever. I'm not doing this. I wasn't doing this to make money. This is like, I'm doing this because it's something I always wanted to do. So if we go a little in the red, that's fine. That was expected. My holy goal was not to be so in the red that my wife would be like, "What the fuck are you doing?" I'm going to be with my mother's with the kid, right? Like that was the goal. Like, you didn't want to, he's going to be, you know, keep it to the limit of a tolerable loss. Right. I think that's hopefully where we're going to be at. We need to sell more tickets, but we're doing pretty good. Gotten a lot of people, a lot of support from folks who have, you know, the Death Valley Driver board itself is sponsoring one of the matches. So a lot of people have kind of kicked in $20 here, $40 here to sort of help, you know, defray some of the costs of some of the stuff. So I'm pretty happy with how that part of it's going. And I'm thrilled with the card we're putting on. I mean, I couldn't, you know, we had some things obviously in mind that didn't come together, but I mean, I'm pretty excited about what we have lined up, especially the top four matches.
Let's talk about the card some. So, you know, the lineup for this, it's incredible. It's wild. So it ranges from like current independent stars, like you said, mentioned Adam Priest, and then there's Manders, there's Warhorse, there's Southern independent legends like Tank, you know, Reverend Dan, Slim J, and you got technical masters like Daniel Maccabe, Tom Lawler, Matt Mikowski, and then there's even Lucha guys, Dr. Cerebro, Demas, Ares, Gringo Loco. But kind of talk about putting together a varied card for the show and what it means to you.
Well, you know, I mean, if we're doing a Dean show, we want it to represent lots of times a different kind of wrestling, because that was kind of his vibe, right? Like we talked about before, he appreciated a ton of different kind of stuff. So we don't want to put on, and that's the other thing, is we're going to do this, we don't want to have a card that could be on one of these other shows, mm-hmm. right? We don't have a card that's going to look like a High Spots card or a GCW card or whatever, right? We want to do some stuff that really represents the weird Segunda Kaida stuff and the Death Valley Driver stuff, right? Like the guys, and, you know, there's a lot of people that we sort of reached out to and couldn't make work. You know, we reached out to guys like Preston Quinn and Damian Wayne, who were like old Southern Virginia guys. A lot of those guys are basically semi-retired and want to come to Philly. And, you know, so, right. The original idea of this was to bring in Yuki Ishikawa and Daisuke Ikeda and have a battle arts match on U.S. soil. That was sort of my original dream. And I got to the, we got to the point where we sort of talk prices and plane tickets with Ishikawa and Ikeda. And then like when we actually finally got the date nailed down, I reached out to Ishikawa. I was like, we're ready to go. Like, where do I send the plane ticket? He's like, my back's all fucked up. I got a regular job. I can't travel. So that was kind of a bummer. That would have been incredible. And who knows, maybe someday if his back feels a little better, he can still do it. But when sort of that fell through, it was like, well, now we had that budgeted. Right. We had the kind of idea that we were going to budget in some money to fly some guys over from Japan. So now we got some money to fly some dudes in from Mexico. Well, we got a little money to pay Tim Thatcher. Right. Because that's not Tim Thatcher is inexpensive. And, you know, we got to do some transfer him. And then, so we had like a little bit of a cushion because we weren't blowing the bank out to fly into Ishikawa as amazing as that would have been. And I always, Dan Maccabi was always part of the, he's a buddy of mine. Friends with Eric, even Eric have hung out in person. I don't remember in person. But he was always kind of part of the discussions of this, especially when we talked about doing a battle arts thing. I mean, that's kind of one of his real stylistic inspirations, and he's a guy who's wrestled like Ikeda and Ishikawa in Europe. So he was always like, we were always talking to him about it. Once it kind of turned out that we weren't going to get them, it's like, well, let's try to find a real showcase match for Dan, because he's in sort of his last, you know, 6 months of his career, which is how we ended up with Thatcher, which I don't know if you're familiar with their history, but they've had four matches before this, and they've all four have been incredible. And Dan, he's the guy who kind of put Dan on the map outside of like little north, you know, east, you know, Portland bar shows. If you've heard of Dan Maccabi, and how Dan Maccabi got to Germany, and how he's won the SCI, all that was from the Thatcher stuff, right? Like that.
Yeah.
So he wanted to have like a big final match with Tim Thatcher as part of his kind of career thing. We were able to pull it off.
Yeah, I watched his Life of IWTV documentary. That was really, really good too. And yeah, like you mentioned, I think it was 3-2-1 battle. That was the match that kind of put him on the map with that.
Yeah, they had two matches at 3-2-1 battle. And then I think they had maybe three. And then they had one for WXW in Canada too. So they wrestled four times. This is their fifth match. They're 2-2. So this is going to be the rubber match, the five-game series. They're not going to – I mean, Dan's got maybe another half dozen matches he's going to wrestle total after this. So this is it for Thatcher Maccabi. And so that is sort of going to be the final determiner of who's going to, you know, come out on top of that series.
Yeah, and he's wrestling people like after this show. I saw he's got a match booked for Prestige against Zack Sabre Jr., which I saw that. My mind just like – was blown. I was like, holy cow, that's going to be incredible. I mean, the Snatcher match.
We at least thought about booking that for our show, and then we heard what Zack Sabre Jr.'s quote is. We're like, okay. There's like apparently I was like, we're looking, because we're, especially because there's a little question, at least I'm going a little behind the curtain here, a little question at least at some point, whether Thatcher was going to be available, right? Because he his number one priority is Pro Wrestling Noah. So if Pro Wrestling Noah wants him in Japan, he's going to be in Japan. So that was something that needed to be figured out for a while. So a little bit, and there was a period where it didn't look like it was going to happen. So we were brainstorming other ideas. I remember suggesting Sabre before Prestige booked it. And then I was like, oh yeah, you know, I think beyond you, Sabre, I think he wants $2,500. I'm like, okay, well, let's think about some other ideas then. that's not going to work. So we're going to, you know. But I'm glad Prestige is doing it. It's awesome. I'm excited about that match. I'm excited that we're getting sort of this, you know, Dan's going to get to check some stuff off his bucket list before he calls it a career. And I think this SCI is his last match in June.
Yeah. It's over the summer. He said it was July or August. I can't remember which, but he hasn't said who it's against yet.
Right. I know, so, but I'm not going to tell anybody. He has not announced it, but it's going to be good. I'll let you know that. So that was part of it. We wanted to get a good big match for Dan. And the Lucha stuff, you know, Gringo Loco is a guy who I had on the Way the Blade podcast. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who came to Denver. We have like a weirdly burgeoning Lucha scene in Denver, where there's like three or four promotions that run Lucha Libre shows in Denver, bringing in people from Mexico. Since I moved here about like 4 or 5 years ago, I've seen like Santo and Negro Casas and Blue Panther and Psycho Cloud and LA Park. And I look at all of these guys live in like a quinceañera hall up in a strip mall outside of Denver, right? Where it's me, three other white people, and, you know, 185 Mexicans in this quinceañera hall. And like La Park is there, you know, or whoever, like all these big stars. And he came, Gringo Loco worked one of those shows. So we sort of chatted, sold my kids a toy. So it was like kind of, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say buddy of mine, but a guy, yeah, sort of a buddy of mine. So I wanted, you know, when we had the show, I was like, well, I kind of want to get Gringo Loco on there. I know he's in town. A lot of the decisions you're making is like, well, who's in town, right? Like Gringo Loco is not somebody I'm going to have to fly in and get a hotel room for because he's here already. GCW is probably using him 3 or 4 times. So we had him and we were thinking about what would be a cool match for him, and we were thinking initially about running Gringo Loco Slim J because they had some cool interactions on ROH TV. So that was like our original idea. We wanted to use Slim J. Was like, actually, guy's a guy I love. You know, he's somebody who, you know, if you dig a little deeper, like, well, you've seen the War Games match. I remember you wrote that up, so you know that he's got like this like catalog of incredible shit, which kind of was under the radar. Not a lot, ton of people saw. So he's somebody I wanted to use, and I had used him before and had a relationship with him, could get him, you know, reason right. So that was the original idea. And then I was actually talking to Robert Bahari, who's a guy who runs High Spots, and, you know, is also like an old Death Valley Dirt Board guy. One of the guys, I think he's the guy who runs High Spots, works for High Spots, and like talking about it. And he goes, you know, Dr. Cerebro spends part of the year in Chicago. He's got like family in Chicago, family in Mexico. So he's in Chicago. So he's got like a U.S., you know, like a work visa and everything like that. And he lives in Chicago part of the time. And you could fly him probably either from Chicago or back to Chicago rather than from Mexico City. So it's like, oh shit, Dr. Schreiber, are you kidding me? That would be insane. So that's how I got, he suggested it. He's his idea. I'm going to give him credit for it. And then, like, I talked to Gringo, and he's like, oh, yeah, I know Cerebro. I can reach out to him. Obviously, there's a blood feud there, but he can at least talk to him. You know, he looked at the promo Gringo caused, had some issues with him, whatever. They're going to settle them with Dean. So he kind of, like, you know, we hooked this up with that. We were kind of able to get Cerebro at a price that point that worked and run that, which is like, you know, these two guys feuded in, you know, IWRG in like 2010, 2011, just some absolutely incredible violent brawls before Gringo was on anybody's radar really early in his career, where he's a guy, if you listen to the podcast I do with him, he's a guy who just decided to kind of go to Mexico without a ton of wrestling experience at all. After like doing a couple of shows, doing a couple of lucha shows in Chicago, he's like, "We should go to Mexico and figure out how to learn on the fly there." And he spent a couple of years there, and part of that time was he was part of those Gringos VIP in IWRG, and he's incredible feud against the Cerebros, Dr. Cerebros, Three Renegro, and Black Terry. So these guys have this history, but not a history that's anybody's done in over a decade. Right, they haven't. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they matched up in one of these Chicago Lucha shows, which isn't on cage match or something. They might have, but like, really, this is like they haven't had a singles match against each other. And this is like this, glory days of indie lucha feud that we're redoing, which I'm really excited about. So that was kind of how that happened.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen any of that IWRG stuff from back then.
It's awesome. I can send you the match that was in Way of the Blade, which I wrote up about this, but there's also a bunch of it on IWTV. They've got a lot of the Black Terry Jr. handhelds of this, so that there's a cage match between Dr. Cerebro and Black Terry versus Gringo Loco and Leo de Diablo, which is on there. It's a bunch of trios matches, maybe a half a dozen or more matches between that with Gringo on one side and Cerebro on the other that are on IWTV.
I guess I know what I'm doing when we're done talking tonight.
Yeah. I mean, you'll just dig into this. It's just all. I mean, that era of like IWRG and that Black Terry, that 2000, that's up there with some of the great individual like 6 month or year runs any promotions ever had. They were just absolutely on fire because they had Negro Navarro doing all of his cool stuff. Black Terry having all these brawls. And guys like the Traumas really at the peak of their powers. And I just was absolutely in love with that stuff. And Black Terry's son, Black Terry Jr., was videotaping a lot of this indie stuff on handhelds and he was selling it for like $2 each. And he would just every week and be like, holy hell, he taped this match? What the shit is this gonna be? And you just like and you could buy it. And he was like really good as a handheld videographer. Like all of his stuff was really great. There were always these really gnarly close-ups and he just like kind of really knew how to frame a match in a really good way. So that's a rabbit hole worth digging into is all that sort of period Black Terry G, because it would be like a lot of IWRG, but also a lot of like small arena indie lucha, which I'm sure there was incredible stuff happening in that vein for probably 30 or 40 years, but this was the period where it was just being like documented in a really cool way.
There's still
a fair amount of indie lucha memes in Zona 23, which is on IWTV pretty regularly. So it's happening now. IWRG is pretty regularly on. They have a YouTube channel where they put their stuff. I just think it's not as good anymore. Like I think that this is kind of a little bit of a down period in that sort of in the thing. Although there's still some great stuff. I mean, one of the other guys we're bringing into the show, Demas, is like a master of like these, he was a guy who, I don't know how familiar you were with him, started his career as a mini.
Let's talk about Demas, kind of what makes him a good fit against, Mad Dog Connolly in that dog.
So he was the guy who started his career as a mini in CMLL. Mm-hmm. Little guys, 5'1" or 5'2" or something like that. Should make him one of the taller wrestlers on the show, probably. He's the new wrestler. So he started his career as a mini and and he was a bestia. 666 was where he started in CMLL. And he won a match, a Cibernetico match in CMLL to advance himself out of the mini division. Virus had done a similar thing about 10 years before. They won the match. You win this match, you're not a mini anymore. And so then he was like sort of an undercard CMLL guy, very, obviously super talented. Eventually had a match with Virus, which had one of my favorite stipulations ever, which was loser has to go back to being a mini. What? So it's like the Pinocchio doesn't get to be a real boy anymore match between Virus and D, which is incredible, just incredible. If you can imagine how bad two guys would fight to not be midgets anymore. So he lost that match, Virus stayed, and he kind of went back to being a mini and then kind of went, left CMLL and just sort of is now a guy who works indie circuit, and he is just like a frenetic bridge troll, like in some sort of horror, like in these leprechaun in the horror movies, basically how he wrestles. He wrestles like this, like absolutely wild, intense, you know, fists and beer bottles and biting and just like, he's, it's like, you know, a ghoulie has been unleashed on you is how he wrestles. One of the best brawlers in the world. I mean, he's pretty, I mean, he's got to be maybe his early 50s now because Lucha. He's been wrestling around forever. And he's just like the guy, you, when I try to think about, Mad Dog Collins is a guy, probably my favorite indie, current working indie wrestler, at least up there. It's not a guy I think who has a nearly the profile, like not as many, nearly as many people know about, hasn't as many high profile matches as somebody who's as good as he is. And I saw, so I was, when I was doing the show, I was like, well, I want to get like Mad Dog Connolly, like a stick dog Connolly, which is a guy I wrote a lot about at The Ringer. Yeah. You know, I think I probably talked about maybe three or four of his matches over the course of when I had the weekly column there. Because
that's
when
I first found out about him, was what you got at The Ringer.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who I don't think had very much of a profile at all before that. And he'd have these great matches on these little small shows. He's had a little, he had a feud with Manders and Anarchy St. Louis this year, which I think has been a little more high profile. They had a great dog collar match a couple of, like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah, and he's a bunch of those. I mean, a lot of people, like these matches with guys you've never heard of that are like good at that, or if not better than that. There's a match he had with Max the Impaler, which I wrote about on The Ringer, which was like a kind of a goofy, really goofy stipulation. It was like, because it was Paradigm Pro, which is these UWFI rules matches. And the idea behind this match was like the first 5 minutes were UWFI rules, and then the second half was like a anything goes street fight.
What?
It's a dumb idea. And they did the whole series of matches. They've done like two shows with those rules, a bunch of matches, and none of them have worked except for this one against Max the Impaler, which is like a hellacious, incredible, like what are these people doing to each other brawl. So these are guys like wanted to showcase. And I was just like, man, who would be like a sick Mad Dog Connolly opponent? And I thought about the Necro Butcher and considered that. There's some Necro Butcher's guy a little harder to book wrestling politics wise.
Yeah.
So then I was like, well, I just had this kind of out of the box thing. It's like, man, I wonder if we could get Demas. Because I'm like, he's like a guy who's having like these Bull Terriers. There's some really, really sick Bull Terrier matches in Mexico, which is the equivalent of dog collar matches, right? Like a little different rules, but
yeah,
basically dog collar matches. He's like the guy you most want to see in one of those things in Mexico. And Mad Dog Collar is the guy you kind of most want to see one of those in the U.S. So it's like ideas like, well, we should just see if we can get Demas. And so I hit Demas up on, you know, like Facebook. And he was like, yeah, going to be working. He works a fair amount in the U.S., never for any indie shows you've ever heard of, but he's a guy who works sort of, when I talked about all the Lucha shows in Colorado, he's a guy who will work Lucha. He's a guy I've seen in Colorado. He's a guy who will work like the kind of like this Lucha show is going to Arizona, a place in Phoenix, and they've got, you know, five or six luchadors as part of a crew that's going to go to Phoenix and going to go to New Mexico and maybe somewhere in Texas. He's also a guy who works a fair number of midget shows, like all midget shows, which is a thing that exists in wrestling, where they'll just be like, yeah, but there's like two or three of them. I don't know if he works for micro wrestling or another micro wrestling offshoot that does a different group of midgets, but he's a guy who like kind of works in the U.S. a lot, but never for like a promotion that would be on NWTV or would have been like, have like a profile. I mean, he's a guy who should be on every GCW show. He's a guy that should be on, No Holds Barred, you know, those shows. Like, you should be on all of those, but for whatever reason, he isn't. So it works out well because he's not, again, a guy we're not going to have to fly in from Mexico because he was working, you know, one of those midget shows in Kansas City or something like that the day before. So it's like, oh, he's flying from Kansas City. So, right, because that's obviously one of the big things you're thinking about. It's like, well, there's lots of guys I would love to get. There's a finite number of plane tickets I can afford to buy. Exactly. Right, so that's like one of the things we think about this, right? Is like, who do I not have to pay a plane ticket for? Some of these guys, like Cerebro and Demas, are guys we're gonna have to fly. They're not guys we're gonna have to fly both ways from Mexico, which is more expensive, obviously, than Kansas City. So that's kind of how that worked out. And then we wanted to have a big Adam Priest showcase because he's like a big action guy and is great. and we wanted something cool. And we already had Slim J kind of lined up. We were thinking about doing Slim J. Gringo Locos was like, well, this would be perfect. Those guys have been wrestling each other. They're both kind of almost like the different generations of that same sort of in Southern indie archetype. They're going to have an awesome match. You know, that's like going to be almost like a no-brainer. Once we sort of shifted gears a little bit away from Gringo Locos.
Yeah, so something I did notice, you mentioned Southern Indies. So you've got Slim J on this, you've got Tank, you've got Reverend Dan. What's the importance of having NWA Anarchy and Wildside represented on this event?
Well, some of my favorite stuff is part of it, right? You know, Reverend Dan's a guy, he's a guy who's been on, you know, he's been on the Way of the Blade podcast twice. The guy, you know, he's, I don't know, a lot of people know this, he's Gypsy Joe's nephew, Reverend Dan. So yeah. And one of the reasons the rest of it was a nephew, obviously the iconic. It's the guy I'm always like, when I see cool Gypsy Joe shit show up on YouTube, looks like he's a buddy of mine. And, you know, it takes a guy who, and that's sort of part of that IWTV Southern independent crew, right? Because that's basically what we're using a lot of, right? The action's right. Part of that, but Southern, you know, Southern Underground Pro and all of those things. And those guys are part of that whole scene. And obviously, you know, if you can use Tank, you want to use Tank, right? I mean, that guy's great. And obviously he's been great for a long, long time. If you want to use Reverend, if you have a chance to use Reverend Dan, you want to use Reverend Dan. And Slim J obviously was a guy who I just, you know, is somebody who I've been championing for a long time. He's a guy, you know, I mean, to the point where when he got booked for the first time in ROH, like Tony Khan sent me a DM, said, look who I booked for ROH. Knowing that he was like I was a Slim J guy, right? He's like, sent me the DM, said, hey, check it out. You got to watch him on ROH next week. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, because I think that's where a lot of people might know Slim J from is ROH. Is, you know, kind of right. Like the modern version of, you know, when they started back up on Honor Club, he was kind of featured really, really regularly with like Trustbusters and whatnot. So if people are going back on, yeah,
like, I mean, I think he's got like some sort of the lowest level of contract.
Yeah. So that. if people are going to go back on IWTV and watch an Anarchy or Wildside Slim J match, what's one match they should check out?
Well, I don't actually know if it's on IWTV, but I mean the War Games match between Team Anarchy and the Devil's Rejects.
Yeah.
One of the best matches of the 20th century.
Yeah, you're the one who kind of turned me on to that match.
Yeah. So that's like the one. I mean, you'll get Tank, you'll get, you know, that's like the, and there's also you know, I'm a huge fan of the Slim J Corey Hollis series. So their dog collar matches on IWTV is one of them. I had, when I did a list of the best dog collar matches ever for the Ringer, I think I had a second, third, really, really high. That's incredible. There's a yard call, which isn't on IWTV, and I don't even think is on YouTube, but I have, my DMs are open. I can get you yard call, which is basically like Corey Hollis and Slim J fighting in a back room of the NWA Anarchy Arena with like the idea of it being a prison fight, and they were like, you know, okay, you're trying to kill each other with like cut up porcelain toilet seats. It's fucking sick. So yard call is, if you haven't seen yard call, you know, DM me on Twitter. I'll get you yard call. Yard call is incredible. The dogs. I mean, that's the thing is like Slim J, most people think of Slim J is like high flyer. That's kind of how he was. And he's a great high flyer. I mean, he had the series with Red and Wildside, and he was part of Special K and the original ROH. But man, that dude is
a
nasty brawler. That's, I think, his real talent, more than what he's kind of known for as being kind of like a guy who invented a lot of high spots and still like can really break them. I imagine that Priest is going to sort of showcase all that stuff. Like, we're going to see a little bit of the yard call Slim J and a little bit of the technical wrestling Slim J in a series with Fred Yehi in Anarchy, like a best of seven. I think it's all on YouTube, where it was like a lot of Slim J like doing like really, really great mat wrestling. He's a guy who can really, I mean, really one of those guys that can almost do anything, and just for whatever reason never, you know, got the spotlight or chance to really showcase it during his career. It was in on smaller shows in Georgia for the longest time, and was like one of those guys, like, man, that's a lost guy. He could have been a big guy if he had been part of bigger part of ROH after his little run there, or he ended up in, you know, AEW, or ended up wherever, NXT at some point. Could have done all that, never really did for whatever reason. So I'm kind of excited that we're getting to showcase him, and he's getting a chance to show off the variety of what he can do, because he can pretty much, like I said, he's a guy who can mat wrestle and submission wrestle. He's a guy who can high fly. He's a guy who can brawl. He pretty much do all this just great looking right hand. I mean, he's a guy who's got all the tools, and, you know, Adam Priest does too. So it's like a real chance that these guys are very, very well-rounded wrestlers. You're going to get a chance to really show off the entirety of what they want to do. They're going to do.
So you mentioned mat wrestling and submission wrestling. So you've got two former MMA fighters on the show with Tom Lawler and Matt Mikowski. So a lot of people are going to be familiar with Tom Lawler from his UFC days. But what about Mikowski? Can you tell everyone a little bit about him?
So he's a guy who had sort of his MMA career was on smaller show, Elite XC and maybe Strike Force, that kind of, I don't think he ever fought in the UFC, but he's like one of the cooler guys of taking that style and doing interesting things with it. He's a guy who can grab arm bars from anywhere, almost like Minoru Tanaka back in the day. Guy with great looking punches and kicks, and just a really, really like a guy who thinks about really cool, interesting ways to do it. And like, I think he was really about to break out, and then, you know, tore his ACL and was gone for like a year, and just started to sort of get back on the horse a little bit and have some cool matches. I had a great match with Tom Lawler right before he hurt himself on Black Label Pro, which is on IWTV, which is awesome and one of my favorite matches of, I think it was 2022. So we were kind of thinking about what we wanted to do about him. We kind of thought about maybe doing a Lawler rematch, but that was something that felt like it'd been done. And I like the idea of Ares is like, this is another guy who's got a lot of really unique, interesting, cool ways to do things in a completely different style, right? So he's a guy who, his strange style stuff is the Yave he does and the submissions and the kind of weird way he moves. And Mikowski also does things in a weird way. Like, he's like a really unique shoot style wrestler, and Ares is a really unique lucha style wrestler. I think there's a decent chance this could just not work at all, right? Like this could just be they could just never be able to get on the same page. It could be bad. Like, this is I'm very confident in a lot of the other matches we have booked to be awesome, right? Like, there's, I can't see any way Demas, Mad Dog Connolly, Dog Hard match is going to be disappointing. I just don't think that's possible. I don't really see any mean somebody blowing their knee out or something like that. Or same thing with, you know, Maccabi Thatcher. We know that's awesome. People see it. We've seen that, right? Slim J. Adam Priest, there's no way those guys are going to. Place out Cerebro, Grigo Logo again. We've seen it. We know what those guys can do. You know, this one could go completely off the rails. Like, it could be, or it could be incredible. And I think this is like, I've been trained at the high variance of this one, right? Like, because if these guys can figure out how to like meld the weird things that one of them does and the weird things the other do into like a cool style clash match, it could be really, really awesome. Or they could never get on the same page at all, and it could be kind of a mess. So it's cool. It's like definitely worth watching. Is like, I don't know whether this is gonna be great or not. It could be awesome.
I think it's built against what, shoot style versus strange style, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I don't know. It's gonna be. But it's like in the spirit of the kind of weird, you know, Enochism war-ish stuff that, you know, Dean loves so much. It's like something like this, where it's just like, I don't know, this could be great, could be bad. I want to see it no matter what, right? Like, I want to, even if it's bad, I want to see what it looks, how it gets bad, because it could be bad in interesting ways. And there's a chance it could be incredible. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Honestly, it's the show I'm looking forward to most over WrestleMania weekend.
Because here's the thing. It's like, you know, and this is me talking, you know, obviously I'm promoting the show. I'm going to try to have an ego about it. But it's just a lot. I mean, there's some other cool things going on WrestleMania weekend, but it's all the kind of things you would expect to see on WrestleMania weekend. Really, right? Like, it just isn't, there isn't any, I don't know how much others, there's a Joey Janela versus somebody who's kind of wacky, and there's like Speedball Mike Bailey is working a bunch of other guys who have cool, I mean, this is the kind of very maybe a weekend kind of stuff, but I mean, we got stuff, we're got wrestlers who aren't wrestling any place else. Demas, this is only show Demas is doing. It's only show Dr. Shriver is doing. Maccabi's only got one other booking. Thatcher's only got one other booking. Slim J's got his only book. We're bringing guys who aren't going to be on their sixth Mania show out of the 11 they're booked on, you know, and are going to be wrestling or later to the night or earlier in the day, and they got three the next day. These are all guys who are going to have like kind of one shot at it and a real incentive to kind of deliver at a high level, right? Like, you know, a guy like Cerebro probably wouldn't mind getting some other U.S. bookings after this. Demas probably isn't the guy who would mind getting some more U.S. bookings after this, right? Like, Slim J would probably like to do, you know, like these all guys who have a chance to really show out, right? Mad Dog Connolly isn't the guy who's booked at GCW or booked tonight, you know, a lot of these other promotions, in not guy booked in Action at other places, but it's a guy who's hungry, I'm sure, to get bigger shots. And this is going to be a show, I don't know how many people are going to be there, but this is going to be a show that people are going to be paying attention to. And this is a lot of these guys' chances to sort of really show out and steal a weekend. And I don't know which match is going to steal the show, and I don't know which match is going to steal the weekend. It feels like there's going to be a match on the show that's going to steal the show, and there's going to be a match on the show that's going to steal a weekend. Could be any of those top four. I mean, it could be something, you know, some of the undercard stuff we haven't even fully announced yet, which also has got some cool, we got some other cool shit that we're going to announce. Nothing as, like, mind-blowing, I think, is the top four, but other cool stuff that we haven't announced yet. That who knows, maybe one of those guys is going to take the reins and really try to show that it's their chance to do it.
And there's the tag match we haven't even talked about yet. Center Insane against Marcus Mathers and Austin Luke.
Right, and here's, these are like, you know, two sort of, in some ways, similar teams, young guys kind of on the cusp of doing bigger things in wrestling from completely different ones. One's from teams from Canada. The other team is sort of a local hometown team, right? There, we're doing it in the H2O Center. These are the H2O guys. And this is a chance to see, like, these guys, you know, again, sort of stamp their name on this. Are they going to be guys who are going to be booked more in bigger promotions, right? Are they going to sort of make their name a little bit? I think it should be really, that should be really cool. Ida,
what's one thing you want people watching the show to take away from it?
Well, I mean, I think wrestling has become kind of homogenized. You know, the spirit of the Death Valley Driver, the spirit of Dean, the spirit of what I've done with Utica, you know, was to expose all of the different flavors of pro wrestling, all of the different ways that wrestling can be awesome, right? Whether it's French catch stuff from the 50s or war or lucha from the 80s or Guatemalan wrestling or shoot or, you know, battle arts or UWFI or all of these different things. And I think now a lot of wrestling looks pretty the same. It's not a giant difference between a New Japan main event and a Seth Rollins match or an Ospreay match on AEW or the version of that match on an indie show with something like Brian Keith or, you know, people like Bailey. We're going to do some variation of the, we all know what it's going to be, right? It's going to be, it's very athletic. It's going to have a bunch of two counts, and guys are going to look surprised when it's not a three count, and they're going to do form exchanges, and they're going to do a bunch of near falls and crazy suplexes and dives, and then it's going to have a finish of the, after four guys do their finishers one after another, somebody's going to, it all kind of, a lot of wrestling looks the same now. Right. So I wanted to say, you know, there is wrestling out there which is very different. And I don't think we're going to be seeing a lot of, I throw a forearm, stare at you, you throw a forearm, stare at me, I throw a forearm, stare at you, I got a 2.9 count and then made a shocked face because I thought it was a three, and then I did a suplex, guy jumps up and yells and does that stuff is not going to be on the show. I mean, maybe there might be a little of it, but for the most part, this is going to be a celebration of all the different ways that wrestling can look outside of the sort of this Matt Meltzer gives this match 6¾ stars formula that a lot of wrestling has kind of turned into. So that's the thing, is like, you're going to see there's, and it's very different, right? There's not Dan McCabe, Tim Thatcher is going to be worked in a very specific style. That's going to be very, very different than the style that Mad Dog Connolly and Demas are going to work, which is going to be very different than the style that Slim J and Adam Priest are going to work. And it's going to be all very, very different wrestling in all the different cool ways. One of the reasons we're getting, we've been trying to get names that aren't like on other shows, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like this is going to be a unique show. It's going to be something very different than all the other shows this weekend. And the wrestling that is going to get it, you know, going to be the most acclaimed stuff, you know, and on Cage Match or in The Observer. This is going to be a tribute to all of the different ways that wrestling can look. And that's kind of what we're trying to do.
I just want to say I appreciate you coming on the show and, you know, chatting with me today about the show and about Dean and everything. Again, Action Wrestling, DVDVR, and Segunda Caída present Dean. It's on Thursday, April 4th at 8 o'clock p.m. from the H2O Wrestling Center in Williamstown, New Jersey. I looked it up on Google Maps. If you're going to be in the area, it's about a 30-minute drive from like the Collective and all that sort of stuff. You can get tickets at actiondean.com. And if you're not able to be there in person, you can watch it live on IWTV.
If you don't have an IWTV account, use promo code ACTION to sign up.
Thank you for that.
That'll be helpful for folks that don't have IWTV. And IWTV is great. I mean, it's got, they probably stream at half a dozen shows, every new shows every week, and have a huge backlog of cool stuff. Like, you know, we talked about how you can watch a lot of this IWRG stuff from 2010 on there, and they've got Battle Lines on there, and All Japan Women, and Wild Side, and old IWA Mid-South stuff. I mean, just all kinds of different, all the wrestling in the world. It's pretty, I mean, $10 a month is not no money, but it's not, you know, that's not that much money. And especially if you can do it for 1 month, catch the show, you know, grab a bunch of cool shit, watch a bunch of cool shit, and then, you know, obviously cancel if you only want to do it for 1 month. So you could see the show for $10 functionally, or free if you already have an IWTV account.
So what's one thing people can do to kind of support? You mentioned the promo code. What's something else people can possibly do to support?
Well, the Death Valley Driver message board is sponsoring a match. Mm-hmm. So a couple things. If you've got a thing that you want to promote, we are taking sponsors for different matches. We've got a couple sponsors already. You've got a podcast you want to promote, a book you want to promote, a website you want to promote, a restaurant that your family runs, whatever it is. We're taking sponsors. And we're doing, like I said, the board is sponsoring something. And that's just folks who, you know, grew up on the Death Valley Driver, or people who found the Death Valley Driver and are kicking in $10 here, $20 there, $40, and even more. And you can just, you know, if you go on the Death Valley Driver board, the Dean Post has a, you know, the specifics of how to do that. But just also just, I think it's Action Wrestling Georgia is PayPal, but you can reach out to Matt on Twitter or me on Twitter. We can tell you to do that if you feel like, you know, I can't make it to the show for whatever reason. I want to throw $20 towards it. I want to throw $40 towards it. I got a little extra cash in my pocket. I want to do that. Obviously, our goal is to try to have me and Eric not lose so much money that I get divorced. Eric's not married, so he doesn't have to worry about getting divorced. I got to worry about getting divorced. So the goal is that I don't lose so much money. And, you know, I'd love to do this again sometime. And if we can come out of it without it being a giant, you know, money suck on my pocket, then maybe there'll be a Dean 2 at some point too, and we'll figure out another crazy series of matches to run. Because I've had a lot of fun putting this together. I'm really excited about a chance to, you know, go to the show and do this whole thing. It's something I've always wanted to do. It's like I said, a personal bucket list thing for me, for Eric. And also just give a shout out to our guy, man, because I think he would have really loved this show. Mm-hmm. I think it's doing his memory justice. It's one of the things that we had sort of forefront in our mind as we've been planning this. Sorry, it was how many whip asses would Dean, exclamation points, would Dean put on the message board or somebody else's match, right? We want to get give this be a heavy exclamation point show. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to plug. Got a book, Way of the Blade.
An amazing book.
Thank you. Way of the Blade, 100 of the greatest bloody matches in professional wrestling history. That's available on Amazon. AE Way of the Blade, which is going to be an AEW specific version of Way of the Blade, that is talking about the bloodiest matches in AEW history. Then, in addition to having the same sort of style, the art from Chris Bryan, that we had similar art, really cool art from him again. Also, I did, I don't know, maybe dozen or more interviews with, so there's gonna be like an oral history aspect to it as well. So we'll talk about Daniel Bryan versus versus John Moxley, you know, the match they had right before the start of the Blackpool Combat Club. Mm-hmm. I'll have a review of that. We'll have some art in that. And then I'll also have quotes from Daniel Bryan, quotes from John Moxley about that match and how what they had coming into it. I talked to, you know, a lot of the big AEW stars, MJF, Moxley, Danielson, Kingston, Tony Khan, all quotes from all those guys in that book. It's turned in. It's at the editing stage right now. I'm hoping it'll be done in time for the show. And copies there. If not, it'll be sometime soon after that. You know, end of sometime in April, sometime early May. That'll be out. I've did a thing with J.R. Goldberg, who's a great wrestling writer, called Methlab Battle Arts. We reviewed a zine. We reviewed Ian Rotten mat work matches. Yeah. So it's like Ian Rotten, Chris Hero, Ian Rotten, Homicide, Ian Rotten, all these like period where Ian Rotten would just have these matches we worked, Matt. We got a second one of those coming out. We're going to review a handful of other Ian Rotten mat work matches. And also somehow JR had a long interview with Ian Rotten. So that's... That I know will be done by the time and available at the show, available on things. So keep your eyes out for that. That's a really weird, cool thing that we did. It's definitely worth $10. JR's a great writer, probably better than me. So his stuff in there is really cool. And I should have something Mania weekend for The Ringer, a big profile piece that I just got the thumbs up on today. So I'm just in the process of thinking about how to put that together, but that should be also keep your eyes on that, peeled for that in the next, you know, 3 weeks or whatever. So that's all my plugs.
Looking forward to that. So again, you can, for more information and announcements on the Dean Show, check out Action Wrestling on Twitter at WrestleAction1. You can follow Phil on Twitter at Phil A. Schneider. You can follow me, Adam, on Twitter, at WriterAdam84, and you can also follow WrestleIn on Twitter, at WrestleIn. Again, Phil, thank you for coming on today, talking about Dean and going over the show with me. Any final words before we go?
No, man, I think folks who certainly will have listened to me talk about the show for an hour, I can't imagine not enjoying it, so... I'd love if you guys get to Philly, we got tickets available still that we want to sell out. So please come buy them. If not, check the show out on IWTV. It's going to be rad. It's going to be pretty good production. They do a good job. And, you know, one of the advantages is doing it with Action. Like I said, these are guys who know what they're doing. Whereas if I try to do this on my own, I doubt I'd be able to figure out how to get streaming working with it. I don't do it. So it's all going to come off really well. And, you know, the Action commentator guys are good. Dylan Hales is going to be doing it. I don't know who else, but, you know, those guys are all pros. And so the presentation is going to be really cool. And, like I said, we're going to steal the weekend. So you guys want to be part of this if you have a chance.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely check it out. I know it's at the top of my list for viewing for WrestleMania weekend. So, again, thanks for everybody for listening. And in the meantime and in between time, that's it for this episode of On the Indies. Bye now.